Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. Welcome from Los Angeles, the Big Valley. Welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver. Let me enunciate my words here. Coming to you live globally through iTunes and Blog Talk Radio and YouTube and a bunch of other platforms. And our goal here is to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. And I should say I'm not where I usually am in my studio. I am in a lake resort community on vacation with some family members. And today we're going to be talking about celiac disease and the gluten-free fad that's going on. And here with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg, and my lovely granddaughter. Today, we will be, like I said, talking about everything about gluten. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial, but they also have this tiny little problem. They're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Because, you know, they just give and give and give until there's nothing left to give, and then they burn out. And, you know, the airlines tell us to put your own oxygen mask on first if you are traveling with a small loved one before you help them with their mask. And the reason they tell you that is because they know from experience that if you don't do that, if you don't put your needs first, that you will likely black out and then you won't be of any good to anybody. So it sounds like a pretty selfish thing to do, doesn't it? I mean, I just keep imagining, you know, the plane going down and everyone screaming and my little bundle of joy there gasping for breath. You know, I'm the caregiver's caregiver, and even I don't know if I could put my mask on first before I help my loved one, because we're just not wired that way. Well, anyway, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. Because anytime we suffer a loss, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend breaks up with us, doctor says you have cancer, attorney says you got to file bankruptcy, whatever it is, you're going to go through a grief process. You know, first there's like denial and then anger and then bargaining, depression. And then, you know, you try to work your way through to acceptance. And if you happen to feel like you're stuck in your grief process, we're going to help you out so that you can get to acceptance as fast as possible. And I do want to thank my last week's guest, the three girls, Liz, Susan, and what's her name, Adrian?
Oh.
Of the Rivet Revolution. Susan, Liz, and Carol. Got it. See, I'm not demented yet. Just a reminder, you can listen to that interview and all of our interviews right here on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com, and of course on all those eight platforms, iTunes, YouTube, you name it, it's out there. All right, enough of that. A big welcome to my granddaughter guest. Let's just call her Sage, just to keep her anonymous. And also to Adrian Gruberg of the Caregiver Space. Welcome, girls.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you. Happy to be here.
I love to be surrounded by two beautiful women. So, as you know, we're talking about celiac disease, which until my granddaughter actually found out that she had that, I didn't know what it was. So I got a really big education. So why don't you, Sage, tell us, in your own words, what you believe celiac disease is, and how you get it, and is there any cure for it, and what you have to do to survive.
All right. In my mind, celiac disease is an autoimmune disease, and the easy way of explaining it, since I honestly don't understand it to an the fullest extent, is I can't tolerate gluten, which
gluten is, for those who really don't even know what gluten is, because there are a lot of people who's gluten, what's that?
Gluten is wheat, oats, barley, and rye. And usually dairy is kind of like the sidekick to gluten. So if you have celiac disease, you most likely cannot eat dairy along with gluten. So
dairy. There goes your cereal.
Yep. Yeah, so what's left to eat? Like dirt?
There's, of course, fruits and vegetables and lots of things like eggs.
Nature's candy.
Exactly. And,
but wait a minute. Eggs is dairy too, isn't it?
No. Some people think they are, but in my mind, they're not really considered dairy.
It's in the dairy section in the grocery. Yeah. That'll do.
Okay.
Yeah. I do eat eggs, though. Yes.
Thank God for eggs. Okay. The incredible edible egg.
What were you experiencing when you went to the doctor and discovered you had celiac disease? What was going on? Yeah.
And how old were you?
I was diagnosed with celiac when I was 5 and a half.
Really?
And yes. And my mom noticed I was extremely underweight, way smaller than I should have been at that time. And I don't know exactly how much I weighed, but I was very small, and I was I was kind of fatigued. I was really tired a lot, and they knew something was up. So we went to the doctor, and my mom tested me for a bunch of things, and we found out I had celiac, and they were like, "What is that?"
But who said, "What is that?" The doctors?
Parents.
Oh, okay. Thank God.
My parents are the experts of celiac disease.
Now they are, yeah.
They are, yeah.
So what are some of the symptoms besides what you mentioned? Did you have stomach pain or, constipation problems? I don't want to embarrass you or anything, but.
It's more internal things that happen over time. If I somehow ingest gluten in some way, I won't get hives or something, or something happens where you can physically see it. It's more internal over time.
It's not immediate. Okay.
But when I eat dairy, I do get a lot of acne, and I do get a lot of stomach pain. I eat large amounts of it.
So what was the initial shock after everyone found out? Did they freak out, or what was the prognosis? So that means, what's going to happen, or what can we do about it? What can't we do about it? How's it going to change our lifestyle?
Since I have two siblings, since my two siblings don't have any allergies or anything,
they don't.
I'm the only one with food restrictions, and since my siblings are older,
lucky you.
Exactly. But everyone else ate normal foods that little kids would eat, chicken nuggets and mac and cheese. And then my parents were just thinking, what can they feed me now since I was 5 and they didn't know what to feed me? And I honestly don't know what they fed me since I don't remember that time in my life. But my mom told me I was in the beginning, I was kind of upset that I couldn't eat Cheez-Its and chicken nuggets and things. But then I she said that I could kind of tell that I wasn't supposed to eat these things. I didn't know why, but I could kind of tell at a very young age. And I
you mean
started
your body
to kind of accept
it. Your body was talking to you?
Yes. And I was just I can't eat this. I don't know why, but I can't eat this, and I'm not going to eat it. And so I haven't eaten them ever since. Oh, that happened.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I'm a little intolerant to lactose milk, and I can drink some of it, but nobody ever told me this. It's just like when I drink too much of it, I have some consequences. And so I just naturally, when I see milk, I say, it's a natural thing. And is that what kind of going on with your body, right?
Yes, it
Okay.
is.
Okay, so go ahead.
Have you found that you can still enjoy food?
Yes, now that more people are kind of starting to discover what like celiac disease is, and more people
Right.
are not eating gluten or dairy, there's more options and almost like accommodations for foods that I couldn't eat before, but now I can. Like when I was 5, we had to make our own bread because there was no gluten-free bread. We
Right.
had to make it. And now there are tons of different brands of gluten-free bread, and I have multiple options. So it's gotten a lot easier throughout the years. But it was difficult in the beginning, but it's gotten way easier.
So it sounds like your celiac disease got discovered around the same time that everyone else's. It maybe they
Yes.
weren't looking for it before, maybe they weren't even diagnosing, maybe they didn't even know what it was before,
Maybe.
and it just kind of all happened at the same time.
Well,
So
it did sort of become a fad. Doctors were looking for it, whereas they hadn't been. And the number of people all of a sudden, it really was all of a sudden everybody was
Yeah.
eating, saying, "I can't eat gluten, I can't eat gluten."
And you
And
see
to
it
the
on
point where
television.
restaurants, were such that a waiter would
Changing
come
their
up to the
menu.
table and ask you if you had any dietary restrictions. They were catering to people with celiac disease.
So did you tell us exactly what they were feeding you at 5 years old? You said what you couldn't have. So what did they feed you besides fruit and vegetables, which every five-year-old loves fruits and vegetables,
Oh, of
right? Yeah, right.
course. Honestly, I'm not 100% sure of what they fed me because I
We'll
was
find
when I was
out.
5. Yes.
We'll find
But
out
I'm
during the
not
break.
sure.
Okay. So let's fast forward now to your diet. How old are you now?
15.
15. Yeah, you probably look like you're 21, but you're 15. Okay. So what does a 15-year-old with celiac disease eat and is happy about what they're eating? Because, eating is one of the few pleasures in life I have
Simple
found.
pleasure.
Yeah, and even miserable people find great pleasure in eating, So what is your pleasure in eating these days?
Because of my food restrictions, I do kind of have a bit of a healthier diet than most people my age, since I
That's why
can't
you look
eat a
so
lot
healthy.
of but I do eat a lot of carbs. Like I eat a lot of rice and pasta, like gluten free, of course. And I eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, not as much as I probably should, but I eat them. And
You drink a lot of water?
no, I
Probably
should,
should.
but I
Everybody
should,
should.
yes.
So, what is your beverage
And
of
protein.
choice?
Ooh, at the moment it is iced tea, sweet iced tea.
Oh. What were you saying
And
about protein, Adrian?
what kind of protein do you eat in here?
Well, along with gluten and dairy, I am also a vegetarian.
Oh,
So
you are.
this was my
Wow.
choice. So I eat a lot of beans and a lot of I eat a lot of eggs and beans, and I eat tofu a lot. So those are like probably my three main sources of protein.
Do you actually like tofu?
Yes, I do. It
Good for you.
has to be cooked right, but yes.
Yeah, the texture and consistency of it bothers me, but I guess there's ways you can fix that. So, Adrian, you have any experience with being on a gluten-free diet or anything like
Well,
that?
I have a cousin who had Crohn's and celiac disease at the same time,
Oh, wow.
And diet was very limited. But this was way back when, like 50 years ago. And it was a new field that, you know, where they just cut at the time. They would cut parts of you out and see how the rest of you and see how the rest of you got used to whatever. But I have somebody that worked for me who thought she had celiac disease, who professed she had celiac disease, but I said, it's okay if you want to be gluten free. You don't, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you don't have to have celiac disease to be gluten free. You know, that's your choice. And I just think it was her choice.
Yeah, after our break, we'll talk about the latest fad of how everyone wants to be gluten free, and they almost say it like it's a, you know, a social honor. Oh yeah, I'm gluten free, and you know, blah blah blah, and it's like they don't probably need to be gluten free. They just choose to do it because everyone else is doing it, and it's a cool thing to do right now. It's like those fad diets and whatever. But we'll talk about that about after the break. So let's take a break right now. So don't go away. And while we're on the break, I'll find out what we fed this little girl when she was 5 years old. So One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. And she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere, but if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy! And we're back with me, Dave Nassani, Adrian Gruberg, and my beautiful granddaughter, Sage. And, you know, I forgot to mention that our new book's coming out just very soon, a couple of weeks maybe, 2-3 weeks.
And you keep promising.
I know, promises. And we're going to have a new book trailer for you to watch. So that'll be exciting with the new book. And, I met some people in Harvard when I was speaking at the entrepreneurship Harvard Business School there. And I'm going to be on some morning TV shows across the country sometime in November, December. So I'm excited about that. So things are happening, and I'll just try not to let it give me a big head. My family will keep me humble. Don't worry about that. So while we were at the break, we spoke to the amazing mom of my granddaughter, and just fill us in. What did they feed you when you were 5 and 6 and 7 years old?
Well, the things I found out were,
Yeah.
so for like example, for chicken nuggets, instead of having these store-bought frozen chicken nuggets, she would make them from scratch with gluten-free flour, and she'd make everything that my siblings would have, kind of alternate, all, I don't know what the word I'm trying to look for is. Like, she just made a different version of it that I could eat for me.
Alternative,
Alternative,
yes.
that's the word. Yep.
She did this by making it from scratch by getting gluten-free flour, and I guess if you have gluten-free flour, you can make just about anything, huh?
Just about, yeah.
Okay, so at what age did you become vegetarian?
Well, maybe about when I was 10.
Okay,
It's been a
and
while.
you just don't like the fact that animals have to die so you can eat, right? A lot of people feel that way. So, do you miss meat? And how has it been? I mean, is it affecting? Some people say that you need animal protein to be healthy, but is that true, or you found otherwise?
Well, it is true. I mean, in some cases it is, in some cases it isn't. I mean,
Depends on what you substitute it with. So what are you eating
exactly.
for the protein? You mentioned beans, stuff like
Beans
that,
and
tofu.
tofu, eggs, a lot of eggs, and a lot of beans.
Vegan, not vegan.
No, I'm not vegan. I don't know what I would eat if I was vegan,
So
honestly.
for those who don't know,
That's
what is
honest enough.
vegan? What
Vegan
is vegan?
is not eating any animal products. So, no eggs, no meat, no cheese, no milk,
Even
nothing.
though an egg is not an animal, it
Yes, it
comes
still
from an
comes from.
animal.
Can't
So
even
that
eat things
they
like
they.
honey.
Oh wow, really?
Because, well, it comes from bees, but
So what do they eat?
I don't
Do you
Vegans
know,
have a hard
Adrian?
time. Vegans have a hard time.
I said we were going to talk about the gluten-free phase, and of course, I have a chiropractor, and I have other doctors I go to, and many of them are what you call holistic and alternative medicine, and so almost all of them, kind of talk down about gluten, how it causes inflammation in your joints, and the reason you have all this pain is because you're eating gluten. So I says, well, I have a lot of arthritis, I have a lot of pain in my joints, I'm going to try it. And I tried it for 3 months. No, and I took this blood test that showed all of the foods that I was sensitive to. And I mean, everything on the list I was sensitive to. I couldn't eat all the foods I loved. I couldn't eat garlic. I couldn't eat gluten, of course. I couldn't eat sugar.
Ooh,
I
of
mean,
course you couldn't eat
you take
sugar.
those three things away, I mean, there's not much left but dirt. So pizza is my favorite food, and I remember one time, calling the guy and saying, "Do you have like gluten? Oh, and I couldn't eat dairy, gluten-free, dairy-free pizza." And there was like one place that says we have gluten-free, dairy-free pizza. I said, "Send it over," and I ate it. And I'm the kind of guy who thinks that there's no such thing as a bad pizza. Even a bad
Right.
pizza is good pizza, because I will eat any pizza anytime,
I
day or night. I
understand.
don't care if it tastes like cardboard. But when I had this pizza, it was worse than cardboard. It was yeah. cardboard that tasted bad. You know, usually cardboard just tastes, you know, no flavor, but this was bad cardboard. And I ate a piece of it, and I threw the other 7 pieces away. That's how bad it was. And I said, I'll never do that again. So after 3 months, I'm expecting all my pain to go away, and nothing happened. So I started eating again, and I got happy. I was happy again. And the pain, I didn't have more pain when I ate it, and I didn't have less pain when I didn't. So
Is it possible that you didn't cut the things out of your diet that you might have been allergic
to? I was really good, and I had the blood sheet there.
I don't question that you were good, but the question is, maybe you were still ingesting things that were not good for you.
No, this list is very comprehensive. And usually, you know, you need to have needles to do an allergy test.
Right.
And that's why some people say this list is test is controversial, that some people poo-poo it. They say, oh, no, you can't tell food sensitivity only from a blood test. And some people claim you can. Some people claim. I mean, nobody can agree on anything in the medical community. You know, one year eggs are bad. The next year eggs are good. One year, you know, sugar's bad. Next year sugar's good, you know, and saccharin. And, you know, they just can't make up their minds. And
sugar's
so I take everything
for a long time.
Yeah.
And will
All right, back to my granddaughter.
Yes.
So tell me how you feel about these people who like almost boast, oh, I'm gluten-free, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that. And you're probably saying to yourself, yeah, try celiac disease, buddy, you know. I don't want to be gluten-free. I have to be gluten-free, and you're doing it by choice. You know, what are your innermost feelings about that?
Kind of does bother me sometimes when people like don't eat gluten just because they don't want to, not if they're doing it for like health reasons, like because they can't eat it or it's making them like it's giving them pain or something, then I get that. But just saying you can't eat gluten just because you don't want to kind of hurts me inside just a little bit, because like if you're in a restaurant or something, they have only a certain amount of gluten-free options, and then people who can eat gluten but don't want to get the gluten-free options, there's not enough for people who actually need it.
I never thought of that. They're like eating your stuff.
And they can eat the others.
Sure. You know, it reminds me of, you know, I have very little hair on the top of my head. So I elected to shave my entire head because, number one, it makes me look cooler than, you know, having a horseshoe thing, you know, some old guy who went bald. And thanks to the young people who have healthy heads of hair who choose to shave their head when they don't have to, I can kind of fit in with them, fly under the radar, and it's kind of like the gluten people who don't need to be gluten. It's like these skinheads who don't need to shave their head, but they just choose to. You know, it's kind of weird what people do, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
So are you consider yourself a happy person?
Yeah, I mean, there's
happy, well adjusted.
Days. There's like kind of good and bad days.
Where the food just kind of gets you down.
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, this is something that will be with you for the rest of your life. Yeah.
No cure. Huh?
Do you foresee any problems down the line?
What do you mean?
In terms of finding a partner for one thing, people to be tolerant, and just friends. You know, you go to dinner at a friend's house, and they'll have to cook a special way for you.
Yeah, will they start shunning you because let's not have Sage over because she's just a pain in the butt to cook for, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff.
Okay.
Or a husband saying, no, I don't want to marry her because She's going to probably make me go gluten-free too. And I, you know, I mean, these are silly arguments because if somebody loves you, they're going to take all of you.
Of course they are.
She's laughing. Sometimes her laugh is like silent.
Yeah.
You know, what was I going to say? I was going to say something, but go ahead. I can't remember, but it'll come to me.
So for like the friends kind of like accepting it, I don't know if that's the right word to say. But
that would be the right word.
They're very accepting. I have a couple friends, like one of my friends, her dad is a really good cook and he knows how to accommodate me. So anytime I go over to her house, her family makes me a meal that I can eat with them.
Like, that's lovely.
Yeah, it's really, really kind. And in about fourth or fifth grade, it got to the point where my friends at school would, if there was a new person at school and I was becoming friends with them and they somehow found out that I had celiac disease and they asked, what is it? Friends would say what it was, what I couldn't eat, and why I couldn't eat it. They would say everything for me because they memorized it and they're extremely careful about like cross contamination and they're really, really, really good about it.
Mm-hmm. So you have no trouble making friends. Good. See, we're not just telling you this stuff or asking you this stuff to make you feel bad or anything like that. This is for all the other people out there.
All the other people who have it. Yeah.
Yeah, who are like freaking out and are depressed and say, my life is over, you know, and here living proof that no, your life's not over. Here's a beautiful young woman who has friends, you know, and
now, I have a question about going. I don't know whether or not you take your own food to school or if you're able to eat cafeteria food, but do they provide anything gluten-free in the cafeterias these days?
When you weren't being homeschooled.
At the moment I'm homeschooled, so I haven't been homeschooled for a couple years. But while I was in public school, I never ate cafeteria food. I always brought my own lunch to school just to be safe. And I've never eaten cafeteria food, and I'm glad I never did because it was gross. It looked very gross.
Yeah, because a lot of people brought their own food, right?
Yeah. A lot of people did. It was like a 50-50 of school lunches and sack lunches.
Yeah, school can be so cruel. You know, people will make fun of you for any reason whatsoever. You wear the wrong color or your hair doesn't look like everybody else's or whatever. Or, you know, your mother puts some weird dish in your lunch and everyone makes fun of it and they start throwing it across the room. You know, I don't know how we all survive grade school and high school and junior high, you know, without needing therapy.
Me either.
So I am sure that this has caused a great deal of sacrifice to the entire family. Because when you only have one person in the family who has a restricted diet, doesn't everybody all kind of have to get on board or at least cooperate? Or otherwise, you know, your mother's making – you know, three or four different meals, or at least two different meals for at the same time. How does that work?
When I first stopped eating gluten and dairy, my mom was making two separate meals, like a gluten-free version of whatever they were having for dinner. But now she kind of started to kind of take away their original plan and just kind of have everyone eat gluten and dairy-free.
Yeah,
just to make life easier.
How do they react to that usually? The rest of the family.
They didn't react that bad.
Is it tasty? Is it tasty?
Yeah, it's gotten a lot better over the years because there's more things that I can eat and more like. Sure.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how tasty some of the gluten-free stuff is because I have a son-in-law who's also gluten-free for different reasons. And necessary reasons. And so every time they come over for dinner, my wife, who's a gourmet cook, goes out of her way to check out every single gluten-free recipe. And some of the things that she makes for him are really, really good. And I eat them, and then she yells at me for eating. No, that's for him. And I said, but it's so good. So, yeah.
That's good.
Gluten-free doesn't have to taste like dirt, right?
Exactly.
Exactly. Yes, and we're here, and your mother is making meals for us every day, and they're very delicious. So you're very fortunate to have such a caring mother and a mother who's an excellent cook. And a very versatile cook as well. So
I mean, I think there was a time when there was a bit of a stigma attached to gluten-free, to people who had celiac disease. I think society's well over that now, really, and are trying to accommodate more than anything else, you know, with products. And I mean, the number of things that I see in the supermarket with the gluten-free tag on it are absolutely amazing.
Yeah,
it's almost become mainline, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great for you. I mean, if you ever were going to be celiac, this is the time for it to happen to you, where awareness is so good, you know, and you're not discriminated against, you're not made fun of, and you're... You can certainly eat food that doesn't taste like dirt, which is big to me. Hey, listen, we're going to take another break and we'll be back. So please don't go away.
Anytime we suffer loss, we grieve. And a lot of people don't realize what even the grief process is. But it could be 5 to 7 steps ranging from denial. I don't believe this is happening. Anger, oh my gosh, I'm so upset this is happening, to a form of bargaining, how can I get out of this, to depression, which is a very serious thing because that often leads to suicide, and then finally, after you realize you have no more control over your situation, and you're totally okay with the new normal that it brings, that wonderful, wonderful place called acceptance.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them.
And we're back with Adrian Gruberg and my granddaughter who has celiac disease. So Adrian, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
So what should we talk about now? I think I've exhausted the topic of celiac disease, unless you can think of something and gluten-free and what have you.
No, not really. I think there's now a very healthy way of dealing with it, and that I'm really glad to see that society's gotten to the point where they're much more tolerant of all these little things.
Yeah, let's talk about diet in general, you know, for seniors, because most seniors. Now, some say seniors are over 50, some say over 60, some say over 65. What is your definition of a senior?
Oh, it's all in the mind. Come on, Dave.
It's all in the mind.
You're not going to do that to me, are you?
So what is your diet? Do you have like a regular diet? What do you eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Breakfast, I have 8 ounces of fat-free Greek yogurt. 8 ounces of berries, 4 ounces of oatmeal, and 2 ounces of nuts. Every day. Okay. And I mix them up.
That sounds very healthy.
It's very healthy. And it's a pound and a half of food. And it keeps you
very...
I weigh it.
Really?
I weigh it every morning. I weigh my lunches and my dinners. My lunches are 4 ounces of hard protein, which would be fish or meat, and a pound of vegetables, and 8 ounces
of vegetables.
A pound of vegetables.
A pound.
And 8 ounces of fruit.
How much is a pound of vegetables? I mean, would it fit like in your hands like this or what?
Yes. A little more. It's a lot of vegetables.
I need to eat a pound of vegetables. Vegetables are the most important thing that anybody can, especially seniors.
And there's so much. There's so many things that I learned from my boyfriend that I never ate before. Never had
like what?
Kohlrabi.
What's that?
Kohlrabi. It's It looks like a giant radish.
Really?
And you just slice it up, and it's heaven. It tastes so good.
Kohlrabi, C-O-L-E?
K-O-H-L-R-A-B-I.
Kohlrabi. Remember that, Sage? We'll buy some at the store and eat some heaven.
Kohlrabi is very good. But, you know, I've got...
What other vegetables do you eat in that pound?
Oh, God, cauliflower, broccoli, peppers, big peppers, little peppers, carrots, of course, celery, of course, and whatever else we might find that's in season.
And how do you prepare it? You don't just stick it in a bowl and eat it.
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I eat it raw. I just think
it's steam it sometimes.
Sometimes I steam it, but like string beans and things. If I'm going to include those, I'll steam them. But I've been on this now for about 3 years, and I feel much better.
Are you a vegetarian?
Nope. I have meat and poultry.
What's your meat of choice?
Ostrich.
Ostrich?
You asked.
I know they're ugly and stupid, but you eat them, huh?
Chopped ostrich meat, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I've never had ostrich.
And bison. Oh, when I was in California, I had kangaroo. And I know this is upsetting your granddaughter.
Close your ears.
It's okay.
Kangaroo. And there were another couple of very exotic things. But, and they don't all taste like chicken. It's not like frog's legs.
I have a terrible story to tell, and I'm going to tell it in front of my granddaughter because what the heck. But my first trip to Hawaii, I rented a moped and I just went to the back side of the island, you know, where all of the I want to say poor people, but they weren't poor. They were very happy, but they were of meager means, you know, just living off the land. And many of them were farmers and many of them had cattle. And so I just happened to go there during this time of the year that they do once a year. They do this thing, and I'll tell you in a moment what that thing is. But I remember they were barbecuing, and the smell was tremendous. And
there
so
was a boar, a pig.
No, it wasn't a boar, it wasn't a pig. But they do that there, you know. They'll take a whole pig and they'll dig a hole and put coals in there, and that's the most tender pig you'll ever eat. I try to stay away from pork because my logic is, you know, that I've seen what pigs eat, and they just will eat anything. They eat the garbage, the slop. And it's just, why would I want to eat an animal that eats garbage? You know, that just can't be good. But a lot of people disagree with me. So that's my diet restriction. I try to not to eat pork unless somebody like forces it on. Here, try this. Okay, just stop it, get away. So anyway, they invited me in. They said, hey, you know, they're very friendly people. It's kind of like watching that show, Dog the Bounty Hunter. You know, it's kind of like those kind of people, you know. So I was okay. You know, I was kind of hungry. I said, hey, you want some, what is it? And they said, well, it's Rocky Mountain oysters. I said, well, that sounds interesting. So yeah, I'll have some. So, I mean, they seasoned it really nice with garlicky and butter and, you know, just herbs. And,
It probably tastes
I didn't know what it was. They didn't tell me what it was, and I'm glad they didn't. So I started eating it. I said, wow, this is really good, you know. And I said, what'd you say this was again? He says, Rocky Mountain oysters. I says, what's that? He says, well, once a year we castrate all our bulls. And this is, you know, bull's balls. And I said, and it was just right here when he said it, and I couldn't, get it down.
look at your granddaughter.
I have tears in my eye.
15-year-olds love stories like that. The grosser, the better, you know. So I couldn't get it down, and so I got something to drink. You know, I drank something to, and I finally got it down. I says. I'm eating, you know, I had to like repeat it, and they explained it. I just want to make sure I understood them correctly, you know.
It's a delicacy.
Apparently, it was the first time when I ate escargot with my wife, you know, like a million years ago. We went to this brand new French restaurant in Burbank when they opened up, and escargot, I didn't really know what it was. My wife wisely didn't tell me what it was, but it tasted just like that, you know, garlicky and I said, wow, these are good. And then they told me that I was eating snails, you know.
Weren't they in the shell?
They were, but they're different looking shells. They were like big shells, like big snails, you know, and I didn't.
If they're shells in general, you should have.
I must have been stupid in those days because I did not make the connection 2 + 2, you know, because. I didn't even know that snails exist. I mean, it seems like the shell was like, you can put it in the palm of your hand. That's a big snail, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know where they raise snails that big. But so, Sage, would you eat escargot or Rocky Mountain oysters? Just curious.
No.
Is there anything else you would like?
So.
Worms, cockroaches, you know, just insects. You know, I remember that scene in one of the movies. I think it was what's that prison in San Francisco, Alcatraz Island, where, you know, they just abused the prisoners, and he saw this cockroach and they were starving him to death. You know, he was just he kept alive by eating cockroaches, because I guess cockroaches must have protein.
High protein.
No more stories like that. Okay. So what do you want to add to this, my granddaughter, as we close? Anything that we missed that you want to just throw in there to those who found out they have celiac disease and are thinking about, you know, just being depressed for the rest of their lives? Tell them why they shouldn't be and why they can make it and why they can have a normal life again.
Well, you have celiac disease. This is more recent years, then it has gotten a lot easier, and you can eat more foods than you think, because there are so many different types of gluten-free and dairy-free versions of food that weren't around a while ago, and it has gotten a lot easier, and it's gonna be okay. It's easier than you think.
It's like the shaved head thing. Everybody's doing it. Practically.
That is true.
That is true. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show. You're a brave young lady, because not many 15-year-old girls would feel confident enough and brave enough and self-assured enough and have a healthy self-image enough to go on global television, if you will, and tell their stories. So kudos to you. And Adrian, thank you so much. How can someone get a hold of you, Adrian, if they want to find out more about the caregiver space?
Or how to weigh food. It's Adrienne, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org, which is also the website, thecaregiverspace.org. And on YouTube, on Facebook, it's The Caregiver Space. And there are several communities within The Caregiver Space now that are very successful.
Tell us briefly, you know, what the caregiver space is and who they minister to and what they do and for those who don't know what the caregiver space is.
We are there for anyone, but primarily for family caregivers, because I was a family caregiver. Before my husband died, I sort of had this idea. It was just at the beginning of Facebook, and I said, gee, I want to do this for caregivers. And little did I know how much money it would take to create a Facebook type of environment. We have a magazine, we have communities, community chats, all sorts of really, really good support. If you ask a question on Facebook in a community, you'll generally get a conversation going. In other words, if you're in a spousal community or an after caregiving community, or a cancer community, a heart disease community, diabetes, I mean, these are all very separate kinds of lives that people end up leading because they're caregiving to different diseases
and different issues
within the disease. Some of them are dietary, but you really learn a lot from the other people in there. And on the caregiver space itself, the magazine sometimes fills in the blanks that the communities don't, because the magazine itself appears in on the website.
Yeah, and you know, you bring
we
up
have what?
Go ahead. I was going to say you bring up a good point about the support groups. I was going to ask Sage if were there any support group or online support that you found that helped you going through your stuff that maybe you can share with others that helped you.
Really, actually, I don't. No. I've never found anyone who has celiac disease.
Did you look?
Are there online communities of those that I can't imagine someone not starting a support group for celiac disease? Maybe you're supposed to do it. Maybe it's you, and that's why they're not out there. They're waiting for you. You'd be perfect. Online support. Facebook page. Start with a Facebook group page.
Start with a Facebook page.
You think that would work, Adrian? You think there's
a
need?
Absolutely. Yes, definitely. Uh-oh. But look at the marketplace. Look, it's being flooded with gluten-free items.
You can answer all the questions that seem to be unanswerable because you're a very wise lady. Very wise. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
And you could have the celiac's recipe book. You know, where all of these wonderful recipes.
Share your mother's recipes. You could even probably charge for them. You know, a nominal fee.
Yeah, the Celiac's cookbook has got to be on its way.
And if it's true that nobody's out there doing it, then you could be filling a huge niche in the market, or as Trump would say, a huge niche in the marketplace. And, you know, whenever you're the first one, you become the greatest one. So that's my advice to you. I've never been wrong. Well, there was that one time. Okay. Well, thank you again, girls, for coming on. I appreciate it. And for everyone watching and listening, tune in every Wednesday at noon. And we thank you so much for coming on board. Don't forget to go to my website, caregiverscaregiver.com, and take our free quiz. Are you a candidate for burnout? And just for doing that, because I'm such a nice guy, I'm going to send you a copy of my first book digitally. It is One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, the amazing story of my amazing wife and how she survived her stroke and continues to survive. So we'll see you next time. Thank you again. God bless you. Bye-bye. Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.